This is Lore Diver, the podcast where I explore the lore of popular and interesting tabletop RPG worlds. POC Gamer Patreon supporters gain early access to episodes, and all episodes are available on Podbean, Spotify, and YouTube. This episode is the history of the Shori Empire, from Pathfinder's Galarian setting. For brevity, this history has been broken down into the rise, history, and recent events of the Shori Empire, just to keep it all nice and simple, because wow, there's a lot of stuff going on. Now, one of the great things that I love about the world of Galarian is that it doesn't rest on its laurels about steeping each part of the world with some deep history to build adventure ideas that you can do stuff with. Like, you can get inspired by it for a character, you can look at it as a GM and be like, oh yeah, I want to run an adventure with that. That's what they bring. And the continent of Grund is no slouch in that department. Now, I've covered a little bit of this before with Vidrian and my discussions about the Mwangi Expanse. This is more of that sort of good action. Now, the Shori Empire, no pun intended, rose to be in the Age of Destiny, before the ascension of Rodan. And this is one of those places in Grund where Rodan's sort of like a afterthought. It doesn't really affect things too much. Famous for its magic and the flying cities it powered, the Shori Empire is likely one of the more slept-on aspects of Mwangi Expanse and Grund in general. So let's talk about the rise of the Shori Empire. What happens when the descendants of nomadic Grundi from the southern Grund meet and mix with peoples of the Mwangi Expanse? The Shori. Led by Black Heron, one of Old Mage Jatembe's 10 magic warriors, the Shori Confederacy was founded in -2556 AR and immediately went to war with the cults of Rovagug, much like the older Jiska Imperium that they neighbored, and succeeded in driving them away temporarily. Not too shabby for a first time out. Then the cults came back. And when they came back, they were allied with Bekyar humans and some deadly Charuka, and they successfully raised a treetop stronghold. This was Zetsaibe, and this took them 10 years of war and siege to accomplish that. So, forming an alliance with the powerful Derry, which I'll be covering in a moment, they pioneered flying platforms and took to the sky. And after a long conflict, the cults were finally broken, and the Shori Empire was born. So we've moved from Confederacy to Empire, or have we? So let's get into their somewhat sordid and fractured history here. This is where we discover that the Shori Empire was never truly an empire, and that this is either a modern misnomer based on the biases of modern academics in Galarian, or it's a remembered name by the victims of the worst of the Shori peoples. Yeah, things get kind of dark here. A key aspect of any empire is that there's central control. There's an emperor, an empress, an associated aristocracy, bureaucracy, all that sort of stuff. And that is absent from Shori civilizations. Each city, and likely by extension any remaining ground-based settlements associated to them, was ruled by a triumvirate of wizards, and each city was functionally independent. Now, some of these places, this may have been like a changing triumvirate, but from the looks of things, what we know from Yajé, it looks like they may have been the same people the entire time, which causes a whole bunch of other problems that we will get into in a separate world-building chat we'll have. Now, so each one is ruled by a triumvirate of wizards, and each city was functionally independent. So in reality, the Shori Empire was a confederacy from the day it formed until the day it died. And a major component of that was that it became increasingly loose as a confederacy as time passed. Basically, cities were just off doing whatever they wanted to do, regardless of whether or not it was good for the larger group. This caused problems. So the magic power of the Shori made them enemies on Grund, specifically with the less magically and less technologically advanced Osirian and Tekritanian League. Then some cities became fascist bastions, advocating for Shori supremacy, and began practicing slavery both on people from the, world of Galarian and Extraplanar as well. So they would enslave genies and geniekin. It was bad scene all around. Practices and knowledge were lost or abandoned, and cities began to fall. Monster attacks, disease outbreak, all sorts of stuff. Things started to go sideways. Ko, which was their capital, and is described as being like a utopia of everything, like arguably like the one good, really good Shori flying city, it fell in -632 AR, attacked by the spawn of Rovagug the Tarrasque, and its malfunctioning and damaged magic remains are still active in its ruins, which is terrifying, and we'll get to that in the ideas in a moment. Alduvai was the last known floating city over Grund, and its triumvirate could not stand the loss of power and prestige of what they saw as their empire. They consorted with the powers of the Dark Tapestry, and in minus 507 AR, the city was driven insane by a Shoggoth and otherworldly powers before it crashed, and this is broadly considered to be the end of the Shori Empire. Mostly because we actually don't know what happened to all the other cities. There's a very short list of known cities and known ruins, and then just discussion of there being more. Now, the city of YJ, or EJ? I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I'm going to say YJ. They actually made it to Tianjia by slipping through the demiplane of Leng, and this is pretty impressive, because it's like in the dream realms, and it's super dangerous. And they fought their way through, succeeded in breaching the wall of Heaven Mountains, only to find they'd lost their propulsion system, and that the denizens of Leng were now permanently part of their lives. So basically, YJ is still there, it's floating over a desert, and parts of the city are no-go zones, because there's monsters there. So basically, the whole place is one big adventure zone, and has forgotten now a lot of what let them be Shori because of these unique pressures that they're under. And that's the history of the place. There's not a lot more to say, unfortunately, because there's not a lot more information as of yet. So where does that leave them for current and recent events? Well, on paper, the Shori Empire has been gone for around 5,000 years. In reality, not so much. With direct lineage, cultural and ethnic, and there's the now stationary city of YJ, which is floating in Tianjia, where its triumvirate continues to be absolutely useless. Just terrible government. And of course, adventurers have encountered the demonically reanimated leaders of Alduvai in that unfortunate city's haunted demon ruins. And of course, there's Ko, which is a whole thing by itself, because there's like crystal contagion and a bunch of other stuff happening. But that's sort of the standing of things right now in the game. So that's like Lost Omens right now. There is one known floating city over in Tianjia. I'm hoping that it will be covered in the Tianjia books that are coming out. We'll see. And where does that leave us, though? How do we integrate this fantastic empire into modern games? So that's where we come to the idea section. And I love the idea section. It's my favorite part of doing these, because I just get to run wild with like the ideas coming to my head. So the Shori Empire isn't so much gone as not currently under observation. In my estimation, the Shori Empire had two hemispheres with two components in them. There's the North and the South Empire. And the components were the flying cities and the ground cities. Why two components? Because of logistics and sense. Flying cities were prestige affairs. They were something you could do when your population got large enough and you had enough resources, magic, and a bunch of other things in order to lift a city into the sky. However, that still leaves a ton of people who were Shori living in these awesome treetop homes that are a good survival strategy in Grund. I mean, like, they weren't obsolete. I mean, 10 years of siege to destroy a city that is on the top of giant trees, that's outstanding. Like, that is amazing. Like, that's as good as a conventional stone fortress. So I think that there's those two components. Now, before we dig deeper into this stuff, we're going to look at who the Shori were, because empires are seldom monoliths. So what I think is going on here is that the Shori ethnic group itself was made up of people who emerged from the blending of nomadic Grundy and pastoral Mwangi cultures and ethnicities. But I don't think it was just like one group meeting one group. I think it was multiple groups meeting, mixing, and so there's actually a bit of variation. And that, so I think that each Shori city likely would have represented slightly different lineages of Shori humans. So you would have different influences from different groups from the Mwangi Expanse, different influences from the Grundy nomads that they encountered to come together and create the Shori with. Now, I also think that given the heavy use of elementals and the nature of humans in this type of fantasy world, that Genikin would have been an uncommon but known subset of the population, and that their treatment really would have depended on what kind of city or what kind of Shori culture they were dealing with obviously the more open and progressive ones being fine, whereas the ones that just like went full on Shori supremacist, they were probably living some miserable lives and trying to escape from that nonsense. The Shori also had deep ties with catfolk, which I thought was pretty cool, whom they aligned with to fight demons, making them likely a fairly common sight in Shori communities and in Shori cities. Rarer, but present, I think, would have been automatons and Grundy humans who survived the fall of the Jiska Imperium and sought out new lives away from Assyrian. I believe that these two civilizations likely would have been good trade partners and would have been on friendly terms with each other because of their similar levels of high magic, having gone different directions, so they're not really competing with each other, and that would have put them at odds with groups like Assyrian in general. And of course, there were the Dari, which were powerful winged gorillas who were also the Shori's closest and most trusted allies, so I believe they would be present as well. So already the Empire is looking really great from an NPC or player character creation perspective. You have a nice selection of ancestries to choose from, and like a really good snapshot of a unique empire. Now, I think that the modern Shori humans and mixed ancestry peoples are likely three populations with differing cultures. There's the descendants of the fallen cities, like the Uemoto, who have retained few cultural practices but have largely adapted to the situations that they're in. Then there's the grounded Shori, and I believe these are peoples living in treetop and floating platform settlements dotted all over Garund. They're culturally closer to the original Shori, but have become increasingly distinctive since the airborne cities ceased visiting. So basically, they lost that influence of cities visiting that sort of would have kept the cultures closer together. So they've begun to really deviate, which is perfectly normal and natural, talking about cultures. And finally, there's the modern Shori. And these are only really present, I think, in YJ, representing a direct cultural lineage to the original empire and maintained in relative isolation. But even there, they've got some pretty serious deviations happening because, well, they've been fighting monsters from Lang and have been sedentary, although floating, for millennia now. So, like, some weird stuff's going on there. On one hand, they are isolated and have that original culture. On the other hand, they've got a lot of unique pressures on them that they're adapting to that prevent them from fully exploring or utilizing or even maintaining those cultures or developing new practices. So I really, really want to see some stuff, Tianjia books for them. Now, on to the remnants of the Empire in the north. So in the northern part of the Empire is the part that is the best known to the world. They left cities in ruins all over the place, had a high rate of flying city creation and monsters and crystal contagion, all that sort of stuff. Why though? Why is the north different from the south in this instance? Well, I believe that the Mwangi Expanse and the inner sea regions they were interacting with were more dangerous and unstable than the southern reaches of the Mwangi Expanse and the lands of central and southern Garund. You've got the spawn of Rovagug, you've got cults for Rovagug, you have Osirian, you have all that sort of stuff all happening in the north. And so it is very dangerous and very unstable. So I'm seeing them as being the leaders in getting cities into the sky and then having the worst time when everything started to come apart. Now, as the cities fell, the survivors on the ground levels either integrated into the Mwangi cultures around them or fled south. These northern locations and relics of the Shori are the ones where players are most likely to encounter anything to do with the Shori, frankly, conventional games. In terms of northern Shori-based campaigns or adventures where the group is made up of Shori descendants or people who have been pulled into that sphere of adventure, the keywords here are salvage, recovery, and reconstruction. The actual nuts and bolts of creating a flying city are still well within the capabilities of modern peoples. They just need the parts and instructions. So we're talking epic campaigns and deadly side quests that take the players from the Mwangi Expanse to Thuvia, then through Assyrian to lands of Tianjia at a minimum. A great starting point may be the Ruins of Ko, with the characters being members of the Uemoto people or their allies, or even just explorers who come there to check out the ruins. And of course, the Uemoto being one of the last branches of the Shori people, at least in my opinion. The southern part of the empire is the part that I think is still active, but it's not an empire. I believe that it is still very much a confederacy, a tighter one, but still a confederacy. I think that away from the coasts, high above the ground on giant baobab trees, are towns and cities that are populated by the Shori. I think that in addition to these treetop settlements, that there are also likely Opongwe-like constructs of floating platforms around the cores of old floating cities that are now seen more as like a life pod for final escape rather than like being a permanent home or something that travels. So I think that they likely collapsed back to their home regions and established these sorts of settlements where they could live safely and sort of not draw any more attention to themselves. And the reason I think this is a likely development is because of the ultimate fate of Olduvai, where power and prestige were cherished over community and survival, and the whole place just like literally got sent to other dimensional hell in the space of moments. So nobody needs that. Nobody wants that. That's why these other groups took note and just opted for a different route in life. And the situation in the South has likely moved away from being an empire, as I said, and is now more of a tight confederation of city-states across a relatively small area of the interior of the southern part of the continent. And I say that because they sort of have to be sandwiched in between everything in such a way they can't be found easily from the coast, but also have some connections to the outside world. I think they likely have poor relationships with the militaristic nation of Holomog, and their traditional Bekyar enemies in KwaZulu to the south are a constant issue that they are constantly engaged, likely in like low-level conflict with. They're probably reliable training partners with the Uruk-hai of Drun, however, and given the upheavals leading into the Lost Omens era, I think there's probably some political fighting happening between Shori, who want to explore the larger world again, and those favoring continued relative isolation. And this is where Vidrian comes in. So, Vidrian is exactly in the state and condition that the Shori need to learn rapidly about the changed world and expand their connections to it. It's cruel and pragmatic, but it can work well for both sides if the politics pans out. And this is because Vidrian desperately needs bigger friends with bigger muscles to help stabilize itself and secure its own future. The Shori have muscle, they have that magical ability, they have the capacity to help stabilize the place by bringing their magical technologies there for things like agriculture and sanitation and all that sort of stuff. So the two of them could just work really well together, I think. Now, of course, this could bring the Shori into conflict with Cheliax, who, as I mentioned in the Vidrian episode, I think are likely to mount an expedition to reclaim their colony. And this is exactly the sort of like big splash onto the world stage that campaigns are made out of. Now, on a lighter level, adding in grounded Shori settlements to your game is probably the easiest way to get the Shori back into things. These treetop and floating platforms settlements combined with the magical technology they pioneered in terms of water production, sanitation, soil enrichment, and agriculture to maintain a floating city are still viable and canonically functional. So a self-sufficient, high fantasy, high magic community living atop a massive baobab tree makes for a creative way to offer the players both a fun background location to be from or a safe place of rest that offers something more than the normal, like, oh, you find a village in the middle of nowhere. No. You find like a thriving community on the top of giant baobab trees. It's wild, and I love it. And there, of course, there's also the Shori ruins. Their dangers and many treasures. I'm not going to go into those heavily here, but I will say that if you go to the Mwangi Expanse book, it goes deep into this in the section on the ruined city of Ko and the nearby Uemoto people. Complete with like weird mutated Zorn and like a crystal contagion. All sorts of awesome stuff. Really good ideas in there that you could recycle into any ruined Shori city that you want, because not all their locations are known. So you can drop these things pretty much anywhere in Garund or around the Inner Sea region, and it's legit. Now, to read more about this, you can find information in the Mwangi Expanse book, The Slave Trenches of Hakotep Adventure Path, The Crucible of Chaos Adventure, or of course you could hit up online resources like AON or the Pathfinder Wiki. Books are available through retailers, game shops, or directly from Paizo, and electronic copies are available through Paizo. Thank you for listening, and remember that you can support this podcast and more through the official POC Gamer Patreon, or through the official POC Gamer Coffee. Remember, hydrate, stay alert, stay safe.